All right, well, thank you. It's rather humbling following Dr. Whittier. His analogy using that movie was quite impressive, actually. I wanted to visit with you guys. What I was asked to talk about was the implementation of some of this technology. As Jack pointed out, we've been able to utilize genomics for several things that I might consider lower-hanging fruit. Genetic defects, which I have a picture of marble bone up there. You guys, or many of you, know far better than I that every breed has gone through problems with genetic defects at one time or another. And before the advent of genomics, what did we have to do? We purged animals based on pedigree, got rid of them. A lot of animals that probably weren't carriers, but we had no way of knowing. With genomics now, we can test them. If they're carriers, then decide what to do. But if it weren't for this, some breeds would have been decimated in the past few years. The other picture I have up here, somebody talked about family relations there before the break. Here's a way to ruin it. This is parentage testing, and we use that in humans as well as cattle and other species. And it's been an extremely effective way of not only ensuring correct pedigree in the seed stock industry, but in commercial applications as well, determining who the sires are of problem calves and being able to remove them. What I want to focus most of my attention on, though, is what we call the complex traits, those traits that are controlled by numerous genes that we have EPDs for, and that's represented by our mixed model equation up here. By law, I have to have at least one equation in every talk because I'm an animal breeder, and I thought, what represents complex traits better than a complex-looking equation? So unfortunately, when genomics first came to the marketplace, this is what you guys were faced with. So you guys opened up a bull sale catalog. You saw a plethora of information, a lot of which, quite frankly, is useless, and we still do that in the seed stock industry. Provide you with adjusted measurements, ratios, EPDs, which of course are what we need to use, perhaps accuracy values on yearling bulls. Really, before the advent of genomics, there wasn't a nickel's worth of difference in accuracy amongst yearling bulls. And then disjoined from all of that, we had results from marker tests, and they were reported in several different scales. And of course, the question arose, and I have some numbers highlighted in red here, why does the adjusted IMF from ultrasound not match up perfectly with the EPD that, again, seems to disagree with the results for the genomic test for marbling? And the answer is, I don't expect them to line up perfectly. They're different, right? One's an adjusted phenotype that has the influence of environment in it. One is an EPD, of course, which separates the wheat from the chaff, so to speak, in terms of focusing only on genetics. And then the other is the result of a marker test, which, if it has any efficacy at all, only accounts for a fraction of the genetic variation. So they're apples, oranges, and pineapples. Now, in terms of incorporating this genomic information into our national cattle evaluation, getting it into EPDs, there's three general approaches that we can use to do that. One is what we might call blending, which is really making an index of our traditional EPD and that genomic information. And that's exactly what the American Hereford Association intends to do as they bring that to fruition. The second approach would be using what we call a genomic relationship. That's what the dairy industry does right now. They use those 50,000 markers and say, this is going to help supplement our pedigree information because then we have known relationships based on genomic information. In order to do that, the industry has to have access to those genotypes. Then the third way is what the American Angus Association is doing right now, treating that molecular information as a correlated trait. Okay, much the same thought process as ultrasound right now. It's correlated to the trait of interest. That's the way Angus is handling it. So the adoption of genomic predictions, American Angus Association out in front with that, has been for a couple of years now. Other breeds are quickly following. American Hereford Association is geared up to be able to release genomic-enhanced EPDs. Simmental is quickly behind them, and other breeds obviously are talking about it. I'd say if you represent a breed and have been to a board meeting where you're not talking about how you get there and get there very quickly, I'd be very concerned about the long-term viability of your breed. The adoption of this has to center on the gain in EPD accuracy, right? That's the benefit, getting more accurate EPDs on animals at a younger age. And I'll go through the benefits of that from both a seed stock and commercial perspective. Now, that benefit, okay, the gain in accuracy is directly related to what I call the proportion of genetic variation explained, okay? And that's the squared genetic correlation. No equations for that, but guys, you have to understand some statistics to get through this. So that is the currency with which we evaluate, does a test work or not? So I was also going to point out that the efficacy of this technology isn't binary. I don't know how many calls I've received. I know Bob Weber's probably received similar calls. Does it work or not? The answer is always yes. This technology works. It's just a matter of how well it works. Right? If it has a genetic correlation of 0.01, it works, but I probably wouldn't use it. Okay? So it works, but we need to focus on how well it works. The adoption of this technology, in my opinion, follows the breeding pyramid. And unfortunately, this fundamental concept of the breeding pyramid isn't as well accepted in beef cattle as it is in other species. Swine and poultry producers understand this forwards and backwards. That's the way their industry is structured. It's still structured the same way in beef cattle, although we don't clearly delineate ourselves as being nucleus breeders, as being multipliers, or being as part of the commercial sector. The fact of the matter is, if you ask seed stock producers, they're all nucleus breeders, right? Fact is, very few of them are. And it's those nucleus breeders that first should utilize new genetic technology, and then the benefits through genetic lag or a trickle-down effect, if you'll allow me a comparison to Reagan economics, flows through the rest of the breeding pyramid. So here's an example of how really the industry is structured. I'm using a Simmental example here. These are what we call the four pathways of selection: sires of sires, sires of dams, dams of sires, dams of dams. I'll focus on sires of sires. These are the breeders that are producing bulls that produce other bulls that are used in the seed stock industry. Those are the ones that drive your genetic change. In Simmental, there's about 30 producers that account for 50% of the sires of sires in that breed. So that nucleus population is relatively small. I think when the 50K product first came to market, it was those kinds of breeders that should have been using it. Now I think it's gotten to a price point where I think it can be used throughout the seed stock industry. But as newer technologies come, genome sequencing, that needs to start in those nucleus herds. So here's how Angus uses the flow of information. So as you get a DNA sample through the ways that Jack talked about, what's it go through? Well, it goes through the association, then to either Pfizer Animal Genetics or Mariel iGenity. That respective company sends back what we might call a molecular breeding value, a genomic prediction, to the breed association that then incorporates it into their national cattle evaluation and spits out what we call a genomic enhanced or marker-assisted EPD. And that product is what we're interested in. I don't care what the component was, that molecular breeding value. All I care about is what the marker-assisted EPD is. So to simplistically show you how it works, that EPD, usually on a young animal, has in it the molecular breeding value, and that combination, which is far more complex than an addition sign, right? I saved you quite a bit of math there. And then the output is what we call the marker-assisted EPD. So the unfortunate thing with regards to putting together a preceding paper is that this area is far from stagnant. So some of those tables that are in your preceding paper changed about 10 days, 2 weeks ago. So these are the correct numbers. Don't sit down, as I would tell my students, don't sit down and scribble and not listen. Listen. This is available on the Angus Association's website. But what they are genetic correlations for a plethora of traits using either the iGenity panel, which is 384 SNPs, or the Pfizer 50K product. And there are trade-offs in terms of which are better depending on the trait. There's also differences in terms of cost as well. The iGenity product is considerably cheaper. Should we ever have actual access to the genotypes, I like the thought of having 50,000 individual SNPs rather than 384. They're not the only ones in this game, though, as I mentioned. The American Hereford Association doing a similar thing. These are the genetic correlations using a 50K panel for a variety of traits there that they're going to implement relatively soon. They're using a different model. They're not using a company like Pfizer or Mariel. They're working with the National Beef Cattle Evaluation Consortium. So they're sending off their DNA samples to a genotyping lab. That lab's sending genotypes via the association to Dorian Garrick at Iowa State, who's doing the work for them. So then the burden of building up the resource is on the Hereford producers, but it allows them a bit more flexibility in how they use that information. Okay, so how do we get from that thing that I've shown you, the genetic correlations to the proportion of genetic variation explained, which I told you is important,